Abbotsford to go next, followed by Tanya with Abbotsford.
Hi, I'm Aiden Peter. I'm with the City of Abbotsford and I'm the Water Quality and Resource Coordinator. Look after water conservation programs, coordinate the drinking water quality programs, and environmental monitoring programs for the regional water system here.
Tanya, after you will be Anu with the North Bank Eye.
Hi, I'm Tanya Bettle. I'm an environmental coordinator for the City of Abbotsford. I work in the Planning and Development Services Department.
Anu, you'll go followed by Beth from, I think, Metro.
Hi, everyone. My name is Anu. I'm just recovering from a cold, so my voice sounds kind of weird. But I'm an environmental planning assistant. I'm a planning assistant on the environmental sustainability team at the City of North Vancouver, and it's located on the unceded territories of the Tsleil-Waututh and Squamish Nations. And happy to be here today.
That's followed by Brittany from the West.
Dag Falk. I'm a trustee for Gulf Islands Trust on South Pender, and on the Gulf Islands water is of course very important, so we have to take care of our watersheds, make sure we have enough water. So
thanks. I'm gonna ask Brittany to go ahead.
Hi, I'm Brittany with the City of New West. I am the integrated stormwater engineer, so I do touch a lot in different areas in our team because we are such a small municipality, but happy to see everyone on this call.
I'm going to ask Erica, followed by Iris.
Hi everyone, my name is Erica Forsman. I'm with the Regional District of Nanaimo. I coordinate the drinking water and watershed protection program for the district there.
Iris, I'm going to ask Jessa Hebier to go after you.
Hi everyone, I'm Iris Chan. I'm an environmental health scientist with Vancouver Coastal Health. I support the health protection team as well as the healthy environments and climate change team. Thanks.
Thank you. Hebier, I'm going to ask you to go next, followed by Jenny with the City of Coquitlam.
Hi, good morning everyone. I'm Javier. I work for the City of Surrey in the Utilities Department as a drainage planner.
Jenny.
Hi, I'm Jenny Tuff. I'm the Environmental Education and Enforcement Manager for the City of Coquitlam.
I'm going to ask Justin from the City of Langley, followed by Corey from Surrey.
Hello, everybody. I'm Justin St. Andrew, an Environmental Coordinator at the Township of Langley in the Water Resources and Environmental Services Department.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Corey Archer. I work with the Environment Section at the City of Surrey.
I'm going to ask Laura, followed by Lauren.
I'm Laura Frank with the Regional District North Okanagan. I work in planning, and my title is Regional Planning Projects Manager.
Lauren.
Lauren Farmer, I'm a senior policy analyst at Metro Vancouver in Indigenous Relations, and I work with Beth. I think she had to hop between meetings, which is probably why she didn't respond when you called on her.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm Lori Bates Frymo. I'm also with Metro Vancouver to work with Lauren, but I'm in the regional planning group, and I am a senior environmental planner.
I'm going to ask Megan from New West, followed by Michelle from Capetto.
Hi everyone, I'm Megan Doyle, Environmental Coordinator with the City of New West.
Michelle, I'm going to call on you, followed by Michaela.
Good morning everyone, Michelle Vasky, I'm a Project Manager for Agriculture and the Environment for the City of Pimentos.
Thank you. Philanthropica. Michaela, followed by Rod.
Hi, I'm Michaela Lamroni. I'm an Islands trustee on Laskiti Island. And like Dag Folk, we're, you know, a small island and water is really important. That's why I'm here.
Right.
Good morning, everybody. Rod Stutt from the City of Maple Ridge. I'm Senior Environmental Planner. I work with both the development side as well as strategic policy development. Thank you.
Thank you. Sarah, I'm going to ask you, followed by Sierra.
Hi, I'm assuming that's me. I'm Sarah Fowler. I'm elected with the Village of Tassis. I also am on the AVIC as Director at Large and the UBCM as Small Community Rep. For my community, I sit on the Watershed Board, so even though that's largely focused on fish, I do see water as being what they require. Thanks.
Thank you. Sierra, followed by Tim.
Hi, I'm Sierra Rempel. I'm a Strategic Planning Coordinator at the Sunshine Coast Regional District. I work with long-term infrastructure planning, drinking water planning, and policy.
By
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Tim Douglas. I'm the planner, engagement lead, and stakeholder relations lead for the Healthy Waters Plan at City of Vancouver, which is a long-range sewer and rainwater management plan for the city.
Zoe, followed by Jared.
Hi, my name is Zoe Narcross-New. I am the Comox-Aik Watershed Protection Coordinator for the Comox Valley Regional District.
Good morning, my name is Jared Ray. I'm the Director of Advocacy and Government Relations at UBCM, as well as staff support to the Environment Committee.
Thanks, Jared. Now, did I miss anyone? Is there anybody who... Okay. All right, so we have, like I said, a good-sized group here with a bit of diversity across the province, so that's great to hear. Hop on to our next slide. So this is just a bit of an agenda. Essentially, we're looking at where we've come from, what we've heard so far, where the strategy is currently, and then a kind of a discussion that we would like to hear from folks on the call here today, and then where we're going, where the strategy is going in the future. So we'll just blaze ahead right now. So I'm going to set the stage for how the strategy has been coming together. The Declaration Act, I'm not sure who knows, you know, how many folks know about the Declaration Act, pardon me, but it was established based on the UN Declaration as the province's framework for reconciliation. And implementing this framework involves taking a distinctions-based approach that acknowledges specific rights, interests, priorities, and concerns of First Nations and Indigenous peoples within the province. Accordingly, we've done a lot of engagement with Indigenous people, and we have essentially committed to co-developing this strategy with Indigenous peoples across the province. And we're going to talk about just kind of what that looks like going forward, but essentially our commitment to the Declaration Act and co-development are a framework that we started with in developing this strategy. Province has committed to. So in January 2022, some of you may have seen this discussion paper that was released, and essentially it was to kind of gain a pulse across the province of what a watershed security strategy and fund could and should be. So there were 10 themes within the discussion paper around watershed governance, understanding watersheds, reconciliation, healthy water, land use planning, supply and demand, aquatic ecosystems, Indigenous knowledge, education outreach, as well as the fund. So it's, you know, a broad look at things, but all of those themes, I would suggest, are still very important and will likely be important to some degree or another in the final strategy. So the discussion paper engagement, we received over 100 online submissions, and we received over 200 written submissions from British Columbians. And the key themes that we heard
were around the importance of reconciliation, climate change governance, creating a culture of water in the province, around culture, social, economic, and environmental systems, understanding water and watersheds, watershed risk assessment and adaptive management, local approaches integrated across sectors, and policy and legislative reform, stewardship of water, stewarding watersheds, so around source protection, land use, agriculture, conservation, restoration, fish and ecosystems, and in addition around building capacity, so developing internal and external capacity and funding for watershed work. Specifically from local governments, we heard around capacity and funding for the successful implementation of the strategy, concerns about the potential of inequitable distribution of the fund, watershed protection, compliance, and enforcement of polluters and unauthorized water users, around climate change, urban industrial growth, legacy land use, and cumulative effects issues which are impacting watershed health and water quality. And there's another 4 points that we heard, the call to increase the use of the Drinking Water Protection Act and other governance tools and regulations that currently exist, the capacity within local governments to implement the Declaration Act and to ensure Indigenous worldviews are, and principles are respected. There was expressed concern about limited capacity of First Nations to work with local governments, and local governments cautioned against downloading governance management responsibilities without providing resources or evaluating existing local governments and communities' efforts and impacts. So that's, there was a lot that we heard from local governments kind of in that discussion paper. These 8 points were, you know, across a number of different areas and really speak to the different themes that were included discussion paper. So I guess, you know, based on your thoughts to date and what your local government, how your local government participated, are these the issues and were there other issues that you want to discuss kind of in that initial phase? We're going to get into a little bit more detail of the intentions paper coming up, but for kind of the early phases, initial thoughts, are there any additional points that you wanted to add?
It was probably in there, but logging, of, you know, watersheds, you know, the harvesting of trees on private property, for instance, because on the islands we have very small watersheds, and so, you know, it's important to make sure every drop is kind of saved. So that's issues for us, and we don't have a lot of regulation. We don't have a lot of authority built in yet, so we're struggling with that. We're seeing struggles on some of the islands, you know, in how to control kind of larger, I mean, not very large, but, you know, acre and more clear cuts.
Okay, and then you said that was on private property, generally?
Oftentimes it's on private property, yeah.
Okay.
And that's the most difficult to address.
Right.
Jen, I might just add, thank you for that comment. That was certainly one of the things that we heard back strongly throughout our engagement on the discussion paper, not necessarily from local governments, but certainly from members of the public. So in our What We Heard report, I think it was the most commented on topic within the discussion paper itself. Both forestry generally, but also particularly on private land.
Thanks, Ned. Thanks, Harris. Rod, I see your hand up. Would you like to?
Yeah, it's some building on what I think some of the points that you had there, and that for me was that interagency collaboration and between, you know, what local governments and regional governments have authority over with the Crown lands surrounding our areas, and these, you know, how, who's going to lead and coordinate that collaboration and the implementation, the regulation, I guess, at the end of the day of these things. So I know I had a brief experience out east working with sort of the regional conservation authorities in places like Ontario, where you had these regional sort of bodies that could help with that leadership, collaboration, coordination piece. And I'm interested to hear more, you know, what's about those possibilities moving forward for especially for Metro Vancouver area.
Hi, sorry, just a second. Sorry, I had to join from my phone today, so I'm just trying to find a quiet spot here. So I think one of the things that was just mentioned about the logging on private lands is it's, you know, the private lands represent such a small portion of the province. I think it's less than 1%, but about 13 to 16% of people get their drinking water from watersheds that are privately owned. And so I think I didn't really see that reflected in the intentions paper. So it's interesting that you mentioned that was one of the most common forms of feedback that was received. And yet it didn't really seem to be addressed, because when the feedback, or sorry, the intentions paper talks about opportunities for governance, and I'm just not really sure how the way it's laid out now would support increased opportunities for governance from local government or Indigenous communities. Karis or Jennifer, did you have a...
I can give a first response, and then if Jennifer has anything to add. So I think the first thing I would just say is the intentions paper is by no means exhaustive. It kind of gives a flavor of the kinds of actions that might be included in the strategy, but we haven't included absolutely everything in here. There are a few references to the Forest and Range Practices Act in here, but certainly I take your point as far as the references to private land as well. So thank you for that feedback. It's great to, it's good for us to hear the gaps that you feel are in the intentions paper as well. And I think we'll get into that a little bit more in the next segment, but appreciate that comment, Zoe. Jennifer, is there anything else?
I think, you know, it is, I mean, we do need to hear the gaps. And certainly, you know, we need to work with our colleagues who work on drinking water, and we will flag this with them as well. And I'm not sure what the path forward is there, but it's really good to understand. And then we'll see where we can go with that. So thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Karis. And Zoe, for your comment. Sarah.
Thank you. This is already very interesting. I'm glad about the clear cuts being brought up. One of the things that my watershed board is discussing often is the dewatering of salmon-bearing streams, and how the bringing back beavers and natural asset management from outside of the specific municipal boundaries, but sort of like the upstream effects with respect to water catchments and slowing down the water. I know that an elder from the nation whose territory I'm on described his 100 years of living in one place as things getting more flushy. So like it rains and then it's just all straight down the chute and there's no sort of more meandering. And maybe this is due to many cumulative effects. But definitely having some sort of slow wing down of the water so that it's not rushing out and eroding and having gravel washes and burying streams that are salmon bearing is something that is definitely on our radar. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah. Okay, so I think I'm going to leave the discussion there for now. As we've alluded to, there will be further discussion kind of based on the policy intentions from the intentions paper that Megan's going to lead us through after Karis goes through those policy intentions. So I'm going to hand it over to Karis. Harris right now.
Yep, thanks, Jen. So I think as many of you are aware, on March 6th, we announced the formal launch of three things, the BC First Nations Water Table, the launch of public engagement on the Watershed Security Strategy Intentions Paper, which we'll be discussing further in the slides, and then also the $100 million investment into the establishment of a Watershed Security Fund. So on the latter point, that $100 million builds on some of the momentum of the $27 million that was invested in the Healthy Watersheds Initiative back in 2020 as part of Stronger BC, and then last year's investment of $30 million in watershed security projects. The next slide, Jen. Thank you. So just to address the fund first, so the Watershed Security Fund and the Watershed Security Strategy are complementary tools. And while we continue to lead the development of the strategy, we are no longer leading the co-development of the Watershed Security Fund. So we have transferred the funding of the $100 million in funding to the Real Estate Foundation of British Columbia, who with First Nations will lead the co-development of the Watershed Security Fund. And as all of this good work gets underway, we will be advisors rather than leaders in the development of it. So it's anticipated to just be one of several tools that will be used to support the Watershed Security Strategy. We have, as a province, a variety of different responsibilities connected to the Watershed Security Strategy, and those will have to be resourced within government in different ways. But ultimately, the strategy will be a comprehensive approach to address a wide range of watershed security issues, some of which Jen touched on in the discussion paper, but others that I'll touch on in giving an overview of the intentions paper. So I guess just to kind of conclude this little element, I'll just say that work on the fund is really just starting. No decisions have been made yet in terms of how the fund will work, and no money has been allocated to projects. It's going to take a little bit of time to establish, but we're hoping that this is just an initial investment and that we'll be able to work with partners to get additional contributions from other sources so that the fund will grow. But we acknowledge that there's a lot of excitement around this, and we'll share as much information as we can as it becomes available. But for now, I'll just talk a little bit more about the Watershed Security Strategy and the intentions paper. So I had alluded to on March 6th, this announcement of the establishment of the BC First Nations Water Table. This is really a new way forward together for us. It's a collaborative structure that was convened in June of last year, and it will be used to address water and watershed security issues of concern between the province of BC and First Nations. It's made up of representatives from the province that you can see on the left-hand side. So there are ministries, they're represented from Waterland Resource Stewardship, Health, Forest, Indigenous Relations and Reconciliation. And then there are also delegates from First Nations across BC that sit at the First Nations Water Caucus, which is a tier one structure. And those delegates were convened with the help of the First Nations Fisheries Council. So the kind of the intention of the water table is to uphold the UN Declaration and the Declaration Act reconciliation objectives that Jen touched on earlier. Also to support the free, prior, and informed consent of First Nations in BC as a foundation for water and watershed security. And then also to ensure that the foundation of watershed security is delivered within the context of the Declaration Act, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission calls to action, and the draft principles that guide the province of BC's relationship with Indigenous peoples. So that's just a little bit of context on the co-development piece. So next slide, please, Jen. Thank you. So again, on the same day, the intentions paper was released, and it was co-developed with the BC First Nations Water Table and informed by engagement from the discussion paper. And it centered around five policy intentions. So we went from the 10 kind of key outcome areas from the discussions paper and narrowed it to the 5 policy intentions. And the policy intentions are really just statements that express what we intend to do through as policies. So it's not necessarily an exhaustive list, but each policy intention in the paper is listed alongside a series of strategic themes and then key actions that are being considered. Next slide, please. Thank you. So my plan is to go through each one of the policy intentions that are listed in the intentions paper, and then we can pause for a little bit of discussion as well at the end. So policy intention 1 is enabling new approaches to watershed governance, and the key strategic themes that are listed here include enhancing local watershed governance, supporting the development of governance structures founded on principles of mutual recognition, respect, sharing, flexibility, accountability, and responsibility with Indigenous peoples, and enhancing coordination, leadership, and accountability across different levels of government to align decision-making for watersheds. So as you can see from these strategic themes, the emphasis is really on inclusion, on capacity building, and on collaboration, recognizing that for watershed governance to be effective, all levels of government, sectors, and communities need to work together. So some of the actions that are under these strategic themes include establishing collaborative processes that involve Indigenous peoples, local governments, quasi-government entities, and other interested parties, supporting implementation of area-based governance systems approaches using watershed assessments informed by science and Indigenous knowledge, and establishing roles and responsibility for different types of governance structures. So next slide, please, Jen. So policy intention 2 is pursuing legislative change, policy development, and alignment of laws and policy to be consistent with the UN Declaration. And the key strategic themes here are aligning the Water Sustainability Act and new and related policies with the UN Declaration, identifying opportunities to collaborate with Indigenous peoples and co-develop policies and procedures about the use of Indigenous knowledge, and considering legislative change and policy development to improve outcomes for watersheds. So you can see from this that it's likely the strategy will explore legislative change to the Water Sustainability Act and other legislation, policies, and programs that relate to water. And this includes to achieve consistency with the UN Declaration and Declaration Act. So some of the examples of actions under this policy intention and these strategic themes include reviewing provincial statutes in consultation and cooperation with Indigenous peoples to ensure consistency with the UN Declaration, co-developing a framework and scope of a provincial environmental flows regulation that includes social and cultural values for ecological health, mapping and communicating the alignment of policies, legislation, and programs that affect aquatic ecosystems, watersheds, and watershed security. And that last one, I think, is was something that really came out of our engagement on the discussion paper, which was people really wanting to understand like how different policies, legislations, and programs all align or work together to help protect aquatic ecosystems, watersheds, and ultimately watershed security. So next slide there, Jen, thanks. Policy intention 3. So this one's really focused on improving our understanding of watersheds. So building a strong foundation of watershed science and knowledge that is accessible for use by Indigenous peoples, local governments, and communities. Strategic themes here include strengthening existing water data and information tools and addressing gaps in current systems, improving understanding of water and watershed use and ecosystem needs and related cumulative effects, and enhancing monitoring and assessment of watershed health to support watershed governance arrangements. So here we really recognize that provincial leadership is needed to support watershed data collection and mapping, and that the accessibility piece is really important. So ensuring that other levels of government and communities can access that data. Therefore, some of the actions in this policy intention included investing in updates and enhancements to provincial mapping of streams, wetlands, landforms, and aquifers, developing guidance and information resources to help water users measure their water use, and supporting governance arrangements in priority areas using risk characterization assessments. So again, just to focus on that last one a bit, some of the feedback that we got through our public engagement was that, you know, it's good to collect science and data and knowledge, but unless we're actually using it to inform something, whether that's decision making for, you know, broader governance arrangements, then, like, how can we make it useful? How can we make it accessible and useful to help work towards watershed security? So our next policy intention is applying holistic approaches to watershed management and ecosystem protection. So the strategic themes here were increasing the leadership role of Indigenous peoples in watershed stewardship and restoration, strengthening regulations, standards, and policy to protect and prioritize water values in decision-making, enhancing communication, education, and outreach to cultivate a shared understanding of the values and issues that exist within watersheds, and adopting wild salmon recovery as a key value in watershed planning. So, as we all know, there are a range of different values that relate to water and watershed health. And this policy intention was really trying to get at the heart of acknowledging all of them so that we can steward watersheds in a holistic way. Some of the actions in this particular intention included empowering Indigenous peoples to lead watershed and restoration planning and initiatives, improving stormwater management, and supporting other levels of government and communities about the tools that exist under the Water Sustainability Act to support watershed security. And then the last policy intention five, is balancing water supply and demand, so both water quality and quantity, at the watershed scale to address the needs of people, the environment, and the economy. With the strategic themes here being proactively considering and addressing existing and or emerging regional pressures and risks, developing policy and guidance to promote incentives for water conservation and reallocation, and developing approaches to meet existing and future demands for humans and requirements for ecosystem health. So this final policy intention really acknowledges the challenges that exist in some watersheds with regard to water demand potentially either now or in the future outstripping water supply. So water allocation needs to be adapted to climate change. We all know that, but also the economic and demographic conditions that exist and ecosystem needs. So some of the actions that we've contemplated here include providing a foundation for and developing a source to tap strategy. So Jennifer mentioned earlier liaising with our drinking water colleagues, and this will be kind of one of the key areas that we align our work. Working with local governments and other water suppliers to develop guidance for drought management and water conservation. And working with ministry partners and local governments to identify areas of greatest water stress and areas where water is available to support strategic housing development decisions. So that's just a quick run through of the various policy intentions within the intentions paper. As I mentioned previously, it's by no means exhaustive, and I've only provided a couple of examples of the kinds of actions that are included within it. But I'll just hand it over to my colleague Megan to facilitate some discussion after hearing this overview.
Thanks, Karis, and thanks for going through the policy intentions and the intentions paper. So that was a lot of information for sure to take in, and we have had a discussion already. Just letting you know that we've taken notes on that, and those were all really amazing points that have already come up. The discussion is to hopefully find out what resonated with you in the policy intentions that Karis just went through, and also to hear more from you about what priorities or concerns are reflected or not reflected in the intentions paper that we've just gone through together. In discussion, it can really help, I think, in the virtual environment, just if you do have your camera on. I know that Jen mentioned earlier we leave that to you, but if you are in a position, I do encourage you to have your camera on for discussion period, and it's really helpful also just for us to see who's raising their hand. And Jen, I might ask if you don't mind not sharing the screen so we can see each other, and I'll just put the questions in the chat. Okay. Dag, please go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. I was thinking about water use management, because it's like we're kind of a little bit like the canaries in the coal mines on the islands, because we have limited water for use. And so anyway, I'm wondering on a big scale too, though, what are the tools or How is the strategy incorporating sort of getting a handle around water use where there might be huge wastage in usage? Now, so I'm thinking there's different sections, kind of thing. Industry is one thing where there's probably a lot of industrial uses of water that could be tightened, you know, because right now I don't think anybody's thinking about tightening, you know, or reducing water use. And so how can that be achieved? And then for domestic use, I was the chair of the local improvement district on North Pender for a few years, and where they had their own water system. And that water system restricted, you know, has limited wall of water through wells that comes from the rainwater, basically. And that's how the aquifers replenish. And so they instituted a 40-gallon per family per day use. And then, you know, it was kind of voluntary, but that was what the expectation was. That's a lot less water than most households use. And so is something being addressed along those lines? Because I think we sort of have to look at that communally. And then one thing that's kind of a pet peeve of mine when I travel is the hospitality industry, like hotels. And if you go to Richmond or Vancouver or any of the cities around the Lower Mainland, and you go to a hotel, they proudly have, you know, these huge shower heads, and you only have the option of turning the water on full blast, and it's like being in a river, you know, in a waterfall or something. And of course that feels wonderful and luxurious, but it's unbelievable how much water is flushed straight down the drains from that kind of use. So are there tools that can be implemented to even start with education? And maybe that's not a point of pride for the hospitality industry, is to brag about how much water they can give you, you know, and then maybe there's some regulation that can happen around that. So anyway, those are my thoughts.
Thank you, Dag. So yeah, there's a real theme around water use and waste and tools to monitor and address that, especially domestic use, but also in the hospitality business, looking at other examples of how people are conserving in other areas. Are we looking at this? And shifting the culture, it sounded like, from, you know, just pride of saving water rather than, yeah, wasting it. So heard you and lots in there. I'm wondering if anyone from the team wants to respond in more depth about how this might relate to the watershed security strategy.
I have a couple questions if no one else has anything.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, thanks so much, Dag. That was really great. And so I think, you know, what I'm hearing from you is that, you know, there was a lot in there. I guess one of the questions more focused on the conservation side of things is that when we start talking about hotels and kind of businesses, if you will, I'll just use that really broadly, within municipal areas, within incorporated lands, we start to, you know, I start to have questions around what are the tools around conservation that would be helpful for local governments? What do you have now, and are there other new tools that we need to think about? You know, in part because, you know, local governments manage the water that they purvey, and so it really limits the role of the province in terms of how we can look at, you know, how we can look at direct interaction or engagement there. But really, you know, for me, one of the questions that comes up is, you know, what tools do you have now? Are there new tools? And is there something different that we could be doing to support local governments in the realm of conservation in particular? That was kind of, as you were talking, that was kind of one thing that I had a question around that would help us, I think, in terms of some of our thinking around where the strategy may go.
Right. Yeah. No, good clarifying questions. There's limited tools, and they're a little bit sort of all over the map. I guess, you know, each group that has the opportunity to do something tries to do something. So the water district, the improvement district that I was talking about, that I was chair of, they had a system where where they posted once a month. They would have volunteers doing water readings for each household. So we had water meters for each house, and then we would walk around and actually read them, because it was not a high-tech operation or anything. So, and then we would post a list of the water usage of each household once a month at the mailboxes type of thing, you know, so that the community could see who was over, who was under, who was, you know, kind of, it was, the intent was to build a bit of pride in saving water. And so being below 40 gallons per day was kind of like, that was the goal, right? And if you went over, there was, and that community had discussions about, should we have a penalty for those going over, or should it cost people if they used more? But they decided, and this was before my time there, they decided not to go that way because there's a limited amount of water. It's not about paying for it. So they didn't want people to feel like they could use more just because they have more resources, more money.
Yeah.
And because the issue was saving the water, not saving the money. And so that was the strategy there. And there were names attached to the households or the addresses, so everybody could see where people lived. And so there was, at one point, somebody objected to that and felt like there was maybe some privacy issues.
I would.
And so they moved away from that system. You know, there was concerns about public shaming kind of thing. Most people really liked it, and it worked quite well. But there was some that objected to it. And so that system of kind of naming the street addresses was changed to a code where each household and their usage was listed by a code that only the administrator kind of knew how to decode it. And so anyway, that's one system. There's another system I've seen in a larger district, water district, where they have a sign on the road, just like you have in the fire protection signs, you know, the very large building boards that says low risk, high risk, you know, for a fire season. And they have a similar thing for water use. And when the water reservoir gets low, the warning gets starker, more strongly warning. So it's voluntary, and then the rest of, you know, if people have their own wells, then there's no particular action at all. So, and there have been some campaigns, you know, like educational conversations online and stuff like that, about installing low flush toilets to at least reduce water that way. So,
thanks very much. Those are good examples, and wide ranging from, yeah, the amount of effort that it takes and education and taking notes for sure here. Okay, I see a few other hands that have come up, probably because Deg has inspired folks, or maybe it's something else. So the first one I saw was actually Tanya, but then you put it down. So I think you work together with Amy, and Amy has her hand up. Hopefully I got that right. You were first. Amy, go ahead.
Yes, Tanya and I do work together. I just wanted to comment too, like just lead on to the conversation from what Dag was saying about water conservation. So in the city of Abbotsford, we were lucky to have smart meters. We have advanced metering infrastructure. And so our regional water system by Abbotsford and Mission. And so Mission is partially metered and Abbotsford is fully metered with smart meters. We did have a WaterWise portal where people could actually track their water consumption, compare it to neighbors, similar to the BC Hydro portal. Right now we're working on fixing some of our meters, but it is a great incentive. And I just wanted to see what the province was thinking of doing in terms of grants and funds for metering. And programs like that.
Metering.
Because I see in the strategic theme 5.3, I think it is, or in the last policy intention 5, there's some information there about encouraging metering and water conservation. And has there been any more thought about maybe some funding and grants for metering?
Thanks for that, Amy. Again, I look to my team. I'm fairly new on this team, so I'm looking at the expertise of the folks around me and seeing Jennifer, you're off mute. Maybe you have a comment here.
Oh, I think I just forgot to put my mute back on. I'm answer that. It's a good question, and I think with the developments and the direction the fund is taking, we'll certainly be working with the fund developers to identify that as a need. And so we'll be kind of working in that line, and then as well, we always are looking at other opportunities to develop funding programs. So we'll be working kind of internally to see what the opportunities are there as well. Also, just reaching out to our municipal affairs colleagues and see what kind of programs that they have. So we do, with kind of the direction that the fund is taking, we'll have to explore what is possible there and what the fund developers are thinking, and we'll certainly provide this advice to them that there is a need around funding and programs for metering, and then we'll kind of have to see where that goes. So, but we'll certainly take it back and identify it as a strong need, and work internally as well with the fund developers to look at how that might unfold.
Thank you.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Amy. So we have next Laura, and then it's Sarah, and then Rob. Go ahead, Laura.
Yeah, so first just a comment. I think in general, those five key themes and kind of the overarching goals and objectives are, really strong. I think where there's more questions in my mind is kind of like the next steps. Like, what does this look like? What's the timeline for potential legislative changes? I think that's when you'll get more valuable feedback from local governments, just because I think right now it's so high level. But I did, I am curious just a little bit more, and I know when we took this to our board for conversation, the topic around enhancing local watershed governance, there was a lot of interest and questions around, like, what does that look like? So is this specific to Crown land decisions and or like ministry allocations, or like what is the shift in governance mean, if you're able to speak to that a little bit more?
Thank you, Laura. Good question.
Yeah.
So the topic around enhancing local watershed governance, and what does this look like? What does the shift in governance potentially look like going forwards? Again, looking to the team for anyone who's... And Heidi Walsh has a great question.
I don't think we have our governance expert on the call, so I can try, and then perhaps Jennifer can fill in if there's anything else. So that's a great question. In terms of what we were thinking, so I think firstly just acknowledging that there are a range of really excellent watershed governance the initiatives and arrangements that already exist in BC, and so learning from those to see, like, what if we were to develop a provincial level framework that could provide some high level direction to what types of governance arrangements could exist within watersheds. That's going to be kind of a key piece as we move forward in developing the final strategy, but then recognizing that watersheds are so unique and there's going to be different interests and different players at different levels, and so they will have to adapt to what each watershed is like specifically, although there could be these high level overarching principles that could be consistent across all of them. That's kind of where we're going. I wouldn't say they necessarily relate to like one particular thing, but they would be more holistic and overarching than that. I don't know, Jennifer, if there's anything
Yeah, I guess just a couple of things to add, just maybe taking a little bit of a step back. So I think the strategy in general, and really helpful to know and understand that, like, the five themes resonated with you and hopefully with others. That's just really helpful in and of itself. And we do need to work on, like, what does implementation look like? And so we're still thinking about that and looking at that as well. And I think the thing with the strategy, when Karis talks about our watersheds all across the province are so different, there will be elements of the strategy that will be rolled out province-wide, but we do know
that everybody's in a different place and has different needs in all parts of the province. And so really looking at what does it mean to talk about the strategy in more of a regional sense. And so that may have it may be a different conversation with, you know, with RDNO than it is in the Peace River. And so really trying to think about like what are the regional and what are the local circumstances that we need to think about. And so some of it will come as we put together the implementation plan for the strategy, but some of it will also come later on as we kind of embark down this road and begin to have more local discussions around what this strategy could look like. And so I think, you know, hearing from everyone here and your colleagues who may not be on the call, kind of what are those regional things that we do need to consider and how might they look different in different parts of the province. I think that would be really helpful for us to know and understand, because certainly the strategy will really just be a starting point, and I know we received a lot of comment about the 20-year timeline, and I think that's because it is going to take us a long time. There will be some really high priority pieces that we work on in the first 5 years, but it will, changing watershed governance in particular, will take us a while, and as we've said it will look different in different areas. And so understanding what those differences are will be an important part of moving forward with the strategy.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks, Jennifer. We have a few comments in the chat box as well. I just want to acknowledge that I'm keeping track of those. But first, we had Sarah. You still have your hand is down, but do you still have a comment?
I just thought that I was next, so I lowered it. Thank you. I really have the good luck to follow what Jennifer was saying about everyone in different places. As much as I understand and recognize that on the Islands Trust, there's a limited amount of water, and so they really need to be as, sort of ruthless with the water conservation as possible. Here in the village of Tassis, we have too much water. That's why we are going to get our dump disactivated, because it rains too much and there's too much leachate. So there's definitely like a lot of things that we have, like the haves and the have-nots among us. And I feel like in our case, we don't have water metering. We assume that all of the pipes are whole and complete, but that's definitely not the case. There's more holes than pipe in some of our asset management learnings. And I also know that the tools that we have as local governments are utility rates and property tax. So that's how we plan to fix the resources and infrastructure that we do have. And it is a flat rate water system in the village of Tassis. So that is something that is sort of the different measuring sticks that we have. To have some kind of like cistern situation would be really useful, sort of like, I don't think that that's ever kind of brought up, where there's rebates for electric cars but not for cisterns, because it does fall free from the sky, but we have to collect it, and that's one of the things that we don't really put a lot of focus on. And I also, the comment in the chat about agriculture and use for that, you know, we prioritize currently industry use of water over food growing, and I just see how that could be a challenge with food security long term. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah. A lot of good comments in there about different ways that we could incentivize water conservation or collecting water, alternative means of water conservation, and also, yeah, the comments about food security and water being really important for that, of course, and how do we capture that in, I guess, this watershed security strategy. So I didn't really hear a specific question in there, but we will capture that and make sure that that's make sure that we bring that forward. Okay, so I'm tracking here. I know, Rob, you had decided to put your comment into the chat because you felt like we were running out of time, so thanks for doing that. And I'm going to read it. Intention number 4 is applying holistic approaches. This resonates with Rob. My team is working to mimic natural hydrology with green infrastructure in Vancouver, and our greatest challenge is provincial regulation and guidance that conflicts with rainwater management best practices. For example, water system design guidelines doesn't allow for infiltration within 3 meters, and BC building code doesn't allow for infiltration within 5 meters of foundation. So, beyond strengthening regulation, we need the province's help to rectify regulatory conflicts. So a really good specific example provided by Rob there of what resonates and also some barriers that he's facing in his work. Thanks, Rob.
Megan, I noticed there's also a question up above. I'm not sure if anyone has answered it, from Michelle.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I did copy that over here. So thanks for mentioning that. So Michelle from the city of Pitt Meadows has said that she did not notice the Ministry of Ag and Food within the provincial circle in the water table diagram. And are they reviewing this strategy? Because I see agriculture is captured in strategic theme 1.1, I assume they would be reviewing it. Pitt Meadows has a large amount of land being used for agriculture, so we'll want to ensure that agricultural uses are considered as a priority in water management. Can someone speak to the water table and whether ag and food is represented?
Do you want to, or you? I can go, Jen. Just go ahead, Jennifer. So yeah, the water table, it's still in its first year. It's almost at its first 1 year anniversary. And at this time, agriculture and food is not, they're not a regular member of the water table. They would have the option of participating as a guest if and when the need arises. At this point, the water table is still in its own governance, kind of evolving. So that hasn't happened yet. But we do anticipate bringing in other kind of topics, other ministries as the need arises, kind of in the future. So right now, and we don't have any of the other sector-specific ministries at the water table, other than forests. Primarily because they are the decision maker around water licensing. We don't have kind of the forest interests and the forestry side of that ministry at the table. So at this time, we've kept it fairly small and tight in terms of those ministries that have a decision making role around water, and that may change, as I said, in the future. But yes, absolutely, Ministry of Agriculture has been a great partner in this work, and we continue to work with them, in particular on food security issues and other initiatives that they have ongoing within their ministry, and they certainly have, you know, contribute where they can for our work. So definitely really appreciate their involvement.
Thank you for that. Okay, and I just wanted to let everyone know, if you haven't seen that, Tanya had mentioned she wasn't aware that the consultation period for the Watershed Security Strategy Intentions paper was wrapped up, and could she still provide written input? And Karis has responded to that in the chat with an email, livingwatersmart@gov.bc.ca, where you can still send a written response if you're still interested and feeling inspired from this conversation. Please do head over there and provide a written response. Okay, there's also a comment here from Sierra that is just really a statement or a comment that notes that stormwater management is included within the local government jurisdiction box within kind of the intentions paper, but important to note that regional districts do not have jurisdiction over stormwater management, and that it is instead the jurisdiction of the province. So just making a clarification there about the role of regional districts in stormwater management. Thank you, Sierra. And looking around for hands and comments, I don't see anything further. So I think we might be ready to share the screen back, Jen, if you don't mind, and continue on with our presentation. And just to note, while Jen's doing that this is by no means the last opportunity to provide comments. As we said, there's the written submissions opportunity. There's also, as we've said before, just the opportunity for one-on-ones if something comes to mind to you after this call, or you didn't get a chance to really focus in on a topic that you're interested in and is really important to you, please reach out to us. Okay, so just to regroup on where we're at in the agenda then, we talked about where we've come and what we've heard so far from local governments, where we are now, and spent some time, you know, just discussing more and hearing from you. And now we just want to let you know sort of where we're going from here. So in summer and fall 2021, and culminated in a discussion paper which went out for review and feedback January 2022. That input was received and was summarized into What We Heard, a report which was shared out in November 2022. And all of these materials supported the development of the intentions paper that we've been speaking about today. So it's where we are currently at in our second round of engagements. In the summer of this year, we will produce another What We Heard, or 2.0, and at the same time use this to begin to develop strategy options and narrow down the actions that will guide the approach for the watershed security strategy. Finally, we'll be launching the strategy in the winter, potentially early 2024. Next slide, please. So just a closer look here at our next steps around engagement. For you to just keep in your mind, we're doing engagement 2.0 now, related to the intentions paper. We will produce a What We Heard 2.0 coming out in summer 2023. And then we'll be developing strategy actions, which will come out in the summer, fall 2023. Strategy launch occurring in the winter 2023-2024. And this is when we'll really be starting to think about, and I think it was Laura who mentioned, you know, that getting into the details of implementation planning, which is where Laura was saying, you know, local governments will have a lot more feedback to provide then. So just to stay tuned as we move along in the process. And next slide, I think we have another opportunity for questions. Now that we've taken a bit of a zoomed out view on where we've been and where we're going with the watershed security strategy. And I'll give a nice long silence in case this takes people a minute.
I've got a question.
Yeah, Laura, go ahead.
I noticed with the invite for this webinar that there was going to be some in-person consultation sessions coming up in the short term. What is the goal of, if there's still not really specifics around what some of these potential changes and implementation items might look like, will the goal still just be kind of on these high level, like the five general areas?
Yeah, so in the next slide, actually, it might be helpful to bring that up, just the regional engagements and where we'll be when, and open to having face-to-face with local governments. I'll start and hopefully the team will jump in. My impression is, like, you know, part of the goal is to, in a way, kind of seek feedback before something specific is written, right, so that we can incorporate that. So if there are concerns or gaps or barriers, that we're able to incorporate that into more specific sort of actions that we would see coming out of the strategy, rather than try to kind of do that without input and then ask afterwards. I think that's just the hope, is that we can build that in after having conversations and hopefully in person a little bit more time to just discuss, apart from webinars like these, to get into a little bit more of the detail. But if anyone else wants to add to that, please do, from the Watershed Security Strategy.
I would say I'm, like, excited. I think it's a wonderful opportunity that you're reaching out and hosting in-person consultation. I wonder if in advance of those meetings, if you could provide, even if you have inklings of some potential changes or ideas that you would want to send to the people you're consulting with beforehand, then we could come and have really informed conversations. Just because I think it's always hard, like, this has been great getting kind of the review and update of where things are at and where it's going, but it, without kind of more specifics, it's sometimes challenging to provide really constructive feedback. So that would just be my one suggestion or ask, but I think it's great that you're reaching out.
That's a great suggestion, I think our team should bring that back and think about how we can maybe bring forward more specific ideas, just anything that might even be just kind of cooking. Yeah, great. Zag, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, thank you. I'm thinking practicality is there. Like, so how do we get to where we want to go from here? I think so. Like, you know, specifically actions maybe or something. So I just want to. And the thought has maybe already gone into this, so you know, just ignore it if it's already addressed. But like the way I'm thinking is, there's a problem. Like, so we have the generic topic of water and watersheds, and then it comes down to sort of specific problems, and some of the specific problems may not be problems we have today, but they're potential problems that we're preventing from happening, right? We're preventing running out of water. And so I think if the strategy can name that, the specifics of like what are the problems, you know, the current problems and the future problems that we want to avoid. And then identifying who has the authority to do something about that. So all the various levels of local governments and provincial governments and water districts and so on, often we find you think you want to do something about it, but you can't because it isn't in your domain, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So cooperation between agencies becomes important. So knowing who it is that has the authority, and in some cases, authority needs to be given to the right bodies, right? So we have to maybe shift where the authorities lie. So there's some kind of a policy work that needs to happen on an overarching way and working together with different agencies. So basically establishing who is going to do the fixing of that problem and what exactly is the problem. And then, you know, when is it going to be implemented? Is there a timeline for what's the goal here? For like, we want to achieve these things by a certain time. And then I think what's really important is to have key performance indicators. So that you can measure how we did. So in 3 to 5 years from now, how many of the problems did we solve? Did we find out who had responsibility, or did it fall apart because the body that wanted or could do something about it didn't have the authority to do something about it? And, you know, when was the timeline followed? That to me will help make it practical. So, because otherwise, you know, one of the things that often happens is in any governance structures is there's a lot of talk and not a lot of action. So how do we prevent that from happening, right? So it's a tall order I'm putting out here, but I think we have to really work clearly together to achieve this. And so that's what's really exciting about these kind of calls, is we have a variety of people from a variety of levels of governance. And talking together, because talking together is the only thing that's
going to
ever get us there. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Dag. That was very, very well thought out. And I'm so thankful that we do have opportunities like this to hear ideas just like that and capture just ways to make it practical, ways to make it sort of make sense and land and make sure we're learning as we go. As you said, like the monitoring and evaluation piece is really, really important as well. So I took note of that, and I'll have to credit you if we come up with something. Dag strategy. Okay, I see another comment here from Lori. Hi, folks. One thought. I know that land use and trade-offs are mentioned several times in the intentions paper. Could you comment how the watershed security strategy will intersect with other provincial plans, example, the BC Housing Plan, and the Premier's desire for blanket up zoning, which will have implications for stormwater management? Okay, thank you, Lori. I'm going to
scan. It's a big question, but I mean, it's basically how will the watershed security strategy intersect with other plans that may have conflicting objectives?
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful. Any thoughts from the team on that interaction with other plans?
think that's a really great comment. And I think we as a team are acutely aware of the fact that there are so many strategies and initiatives happening across government at the moment. And it's kind of incumbent upon us to work across different ministries to be able to ensure that our strategies are aligned and that where there are potential conflicts that we can work together to resolve them. So just as an example, we're working closely with folks on the Coastal Marine Strategy. I know I got a couple of emails ahead of this webinar where folks were interested in that as well. So we're working closely with them, with folks working on flood strategy, wild salmon. Like, there's just a ton out there, but I think you rightly point out that some of them, there could be some tensions as opposed to some where it's more obvious where we align. So it's going to be on us to work closely with those teams to come up with good solutions. Jennifer, I don't know if there's anything else.
Yeah, no, that you're bang on, Karis. That's exactly what needs to happen. And yeah, I've never heard of blanket upzoning. We are watching the housing plan and we're trying to see where it's going, but that's an interesting one, so we'll have to look at that. So yeah, and you know, we do look to folks like yourselves to help identify kind of from your perspective and from your area of expertise where you see the potential for the conflict or the kind of that tension to happen. So, you know, any thoughts like this blanket up zoning piece, we're really appreciative to hear about. So thank you for that. And we're going to add that to the stormwater list.
Awesome. And we do have a question of what is blanket upzoning. So if you want to speak to that, Lori, please feel free. It seems like there's a few people in the room interested before we move on.
Sure. I'm just about to send a link here to an article,
okay.
CDC Thank article you. That kind of talks about the essentially getting rid of single family zoning.
Okay.
And that, of course, has implications for density and, of course, implications for stormwater management. If no infrastructure is installed.
Okay, thank you for that. So we can all go and look at that article after this to bring ourselves up to speed.
Can I ask a question? Sorry for not putting my hand up. I'm just curious as well, and not having kind of read this and still kind of learning and understanding the housing plan, I'm wondering about like the building code and whether there's been talk about looking at the building code as well. I know years ago we had some work to look at gray water and purple pipes and things like that with the building code, but I'm curious if any of you are hearing about changes to the building code or kind of what you might be hearing there. No? Silence.
No, I'm kind of out of the loop on building code, so...
My understanding is they're about to release an updated code in, like, it's overdue.
Oh, okay.
And it's providing the new step code regulations. And I think it was supposed to be released December of last year, and I think we're still waiting on it, but maybe there's an opportunity to check it
in
where it's at.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Okay. There's still a little bit of time for questions if anyone has anything that's coming up. We have nothing left in our presentation, so I think after this we'll just be wrapping up and I would hand it over back to you, Jen.
Thanks, Megan. And thanks everyone for participating today. I think this was a helpful exercise on our part from the province to hear from folks who kind of had specific and or general things to share. As we noted earlier, if you do have additional items that you'd like to share, certainly reach out to the Living Water Smart email and you can book, you know, a 45-minute chat with us when we're out on the road. If those times don't work for you or you'd rather meet virtually, you can also reach out that way and we can arrange a virtual chat together. If there's anything that you kind of think about later, that's how I usually operate. I'm like, oh yeah, should have asked this. You can always just drop us an email as well if there's kind of specifics, comments that you want to make, or if you want to provide feedback to specifically to the attention paper as noted. We certainly will accept any kind of feedback you want to provide. We cannot guarantee that feedback received now will end up in the What We Heard report, which will be published in August, but we will certainly take any feedback and discussion and kind of questions that you have for us and for consideration in developing of the strategy and the implementation plan going forward. And I think that's all that we have for today. We will certainly reach out in the future as things evolve, and we look forward to working with you folks. Thank you very much. Okay. Thanks.
Well, I want to say something, but I don't think I'm going to. You know, this is what it is to be the waterfowl, is the person who's wants to point out how the lowest ability to do anything is most responsive.
Folks, drop off. Do you want me to end the meeting, or did you want to stay on the line and have a chat? Mm-hmm.
I was just hoping for the meeting report. Can I do that, or do you do that, please? I'm not sure.
To download the transcript.
Megan, what was the meeting? Or the Karis, yeah.
Just to have a list of everyone who attended.
Yeah, the attendants, yeah.
I did do a screen capture as well, and I saved the chat, so I have the chat in a note document.
Okay.
And I think I got everyone in the screenshot, unless people were kind of in and out.
Yeah. Okay, then I think we're good. We don't need the transcript, so I think there. Thank you very much, Louise, for helping out and sticking around. Really appreciate it.
Very interesting. Have a great day, everyone.
You as well.
You too.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.
So, you're listening to Waterfowl Podcast, produced at the Green Antler in the village of Tassis, which is in a rainforest where we get more rain than ocean falls. But not the most in the world. I'm trying to say, oh, it's in my other thing. Okay. Well, I think I've deleted all the parts of this. I did, but it's important for us to understand that I think that I made this point during the talk, but when we measure, you know, whether it's coastal marine strategies, flooding, salmon, our specific needs for agricultural use in water. I know that municipalities, the sort of least resourced of all the governments, provincial and federal, are the ones that are tasked with monitoring the quality of water, testing. We, in the village of Tassis, dug some test wells to monitor the quality of our water. we also used to be on surface water when I first moved here through the McKelvey Creek water intake, which is now blocked and clogged up with rocks, so no water can come into it. But that is still our secondary water source. And the primary water source is the wells. That was something that cost a lot of money to switch over to dig the wells and then the measuring wells, because we are in a post-industry town where there are different industrial chemicals buried around. So that's why we have to test the water as much as we do. Also, we have very limited resources in which to pay for said testing and said water improvements. One of the things that I was interested to learn on the Islands Trust during this call from the Islands Trust is that they are, you know, putting up who's using the most water in their areas, in their neighborhoods, because they have so little water that they have to put, sort of shame people into conservation, which is really, to me, a sign of desperation. And I know that in the Sunshine Coast too, they were recently on water alert until like the new year from the summer. So it was like a 6 month, water restriction. And I know too that, that is not the problem that we here in Tassus have. We are flooded for some of the year. We built a detention pond to catch rainwater running off the mountain, and hold it until it can go out to sea with the low tide, because if there is king tide and record rainfall, then like in the 70s it flooded out the lower town, which houses two-thirds of the residential properties in our community. We also have very quality water, but in the water monitoring, I suppose, so like municipalities are in charge of water for drinking that comes out of your tap, securing that water, getting pumping stations, and then also the flushing part where it's the wastewater and sewer and storm sewer. And so these are two expensive endeavors in that sense. One of the things that I know the Village of Tassus has done is in when we're doing our road improvements, we're also doing our water main improvements, which means that we are making new mapping for the assets underground and understanding where the holes are. We've done some smoke tests to see where the leaks are. We're trying to decrease our pumping time so that we can save money that way. But I will just tell this brief story and then this will be the end of the episode. So because I am on the Nooka Sound Watershed Society board for the Village of Tassus since 2018 when I was first elected, I have learned that through the DFO monitoring of the Volunteer Salmon Hatchery, which is in Public Works Yard and sort of downtown Tassus, we have not otolith marked our fish for maybe this will be the second year running because of the McKelvey intake being clogged with gravel. And when it's not the Village of Tassus, who's, since it's our secondary water source now, we're not putting as much maintenance resources into maintaining it because now we have to focus on the primary place where we get our water, which is from wells, one well, a singular. We are no longer having two sources of water, which is required for otolith marking. So I will go into what that means. Otolith marking is the ear bone of the salmon fish. It is something that when they're small fish, they alternate between surface water and groundwater, and which has different temperatures, which leaves sort of a barcode, if you will, on the ear bone of the fish. When the fish come back from, you know, their ocean life and come back to spawn in the rivers in which they were released. In this case, this Tassus River and the Lena River are the, or the Cowichew is the First Nations name for the Lena River. So the fish come back, we can track them by their otolith markings. But because of our McKelvey water intake being blocked, we are no longer able to have two different temperatures of water in which to create these otolith markings. So now, 4 years from now, when these fish that are released this year come back, there will not be a way to know where they come from. I hope that this is informative to people. I know that it's quite complicated. And I also know that it's expensive to maintain your secondary water resource, but it's also expensive not to. So I think that there's definitely a lot that this intention paper hits the mark on, and having a watershed management strategy, whether that is to support places that are water deficient and also to support places that, because this is the thing about water, it's just the right amount. There's definitely a lot of Goldilocks situations, whether it's temperature, whether it's water, you need the right amount and the right quality. Having too much or too little is a challenge. And I think that that's all I'm going to say about water at the Waterfowl Podcast today. This episode is going to be published close to Christmas time. So thank you for listening to the Green Antler production. My name is Sarah Fowler. I am happy to do this work and to learn about water and species and governance and management and strategies and intention papers, and about what it is to live in the Wild West Coast, where we maybe have to recognize where we have a lot of water. And one of the things that we need to have in our goals is to have water conservation still, even though we have a lot of it. You know, we don't want to waste what we have. We recognize that this is not just our water. This is for future generations. This is for fish. This is for beavers. This is for, you know, the wellness, I guess, of the region. I also will just leave this last bit. Another thing I learned on the watershed board is that the forestry that happens in and around our area, all surrounding our municipality, is TFL 19. And I've learned from who was the fisheries manager and now is the land manager for the nation, was talking about how young trees, when we replant new trees, they are thirsty and they drink up a lot of the water. And so older trees are maybe more established and are able to already be built up, and they're not as thirsty. So one of the interesting stats that has come out of research in Seattle is that in some cases, forestry is affecting the water levels in rivers as much as 50% because of the younger saplings from, you know, just planted to 10 years being really thirsty and needing to, really drink it up. But I also, you know, this is just from my own background. Everyone knows that if you let your seedlings dry out, then they won't make it to grow into a larger, fruitful, I know my tomato plants, if I don't water them when they're seeds and I let them dry out, they're not going to get to the actual fruiting phase of their life cycle. And that's one of the reflections that I'll leave you with. Thanks again for listening. Happy holidays. And this is season 4 of the Waterfowl Podcast. This recording was made in April on the 25th. It's a Wednesday. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.